Okay, good morning. Let's see. Did anyone want to be responsible for cameras or questions this morning for a point? Okay, I'll put you down. And I think over the weekend, I'll figure out a scheme so you can kind of keep track of which times you've done this. All right, and I'll put you down to okay, very good. Let's see. So the plan for today, unless there are questions, of course, always feel free to ask questions, is to move into the algebraic operations and how they interact with derivatives, and in particular also with the function spaces that we've been looking at last time. So algebraic operations on functions and how they interact well, something we did last time, last term, was to study their interactions with limits. Okay, so we're gonna add to that. So from 127A, limits and continuity and today, of course, what we've been doing so far, which is a derivative. So we want to see what happens to the derivatives. And in particular, we would like to see how they interact with the function spaces that I talked about last time. So remember the function spaces. Let me add a new notation, one new one, fun. This is just all functions. From R to R. Just so I have a name for it. Okay, but we're mostly interested in subspaces. So we were interested in this set of continuous functions that we talked about last time, and the differentiable functions that we also talked about, and the continuously differentiable functions, which turn out to be even more useful. And then that sequence continued, you could have twice differentiable ones, et cetera. Okay, so we talked about those. And we are interested also in how these algebraic operations relate to those spaces of functions. Okay, and so let me just list the operations of interest. So if we have two functions, I'm just gonna write it for the case where the domain is all of R. There are similar statements where the domain is smaller, and so you should think about how that goes, but it's just slightly shorter to write if I use all of R. So let me do that. So if we have F and G are functions, mapping R to R, or in other words, in the notation that I just wrote a second ago, that means that F and G are elements of this space fun R, just the same thing. Okay, and I have some number. Let me call it K, because that's what the text does. Just some number. Okay, then I can combine these to get new functions. And let me just categorize these. So there's a linearity. So we can multiply a function by a number. Okay, so this is some new function. And actually, let me just keep a running example just so I have one running along here. So e.g., I could take f to be sine of x. Next, let me take g to be sine of x. So, take g equals sine of x, and f is equal to actually, I'm going to take it to be 1 over x. Okay. All right, so then I can take k to be some number, so k equals 3. So I can just do that. So here we're going to take so then k times f is just going to be 3 times 1 over x. Okay, and then the other thing we can do is add, for linearity, is to add them. So f plus g will be another function. Will be another function. And of course, it's exactly what you'd think. So this is just a sine of x plus 1 over x. So those are the two operations for linearity, the simplest two operations. Then the next ones are the product, which is slightly more complicated. And we just write it, of course, as f times g. Again, that gives us another function. And in this case, it'll be, so this is k times f, and this one is f plus g. F times g is going to be, of course, 1 over x sine x. I hope the notation is clear. Right. The final operation of interest is going to be the composition. And actually, right in this order, g. And I hope you can tell the difference. Let me know if there's a problem. But I have a dot, which is filled in for times, and an open circle, which is supposed to be different for a composition. Okay. So that's the composition. Also, a function. And that just means something like if I take a g to be the sine and compose that with f, that's going to be the sine of 1 over x. And actually, so unlike all the other operations we have so far, this one's not commutative. So what would be f composed with g, for example? Is that clear just from the notation? If I switch them around. Yeah, exactly. So people have written it in the solutions, right? So this time, instead of plugging 1 over x into sine, I'm going to plug sine into 1 over x. And so that's not the same thing. And it gives me 1 over the sine of x. Right. Okay, so those are the operations. Okay, but again, since I get a new function, that means that on this space here of functions, I have these various operations. I can add, or I can multiply. Let me write this way: I can multiply by k, I can add, and I can multiply two functions, and I compose two functions, and all of these just take functions back to themselves. Okay. All right, and. So then with the first thing that I wanted to mention from last time, from last term, which is limits and continuity. Also, if my functions were continuous, then they're gonna stay continuous when I do all of these different operations to them, okay? So that's something we had before. So for continuity, so if we have f and g continuous, or in other words, f and g in the space of continuous functions, which we called C0 of R last time, and we'll continue to, then so are all of these other things. All right, so R times f, f plus g, f times g, and g composed with f are also continuous. Okay. So that's what you got from looking at the limits last term. Okay, and one case of this is actually going to be quite handy for a proof later on, so let me just emphasize it. It's also one of the more tricky ones. So in particular, Right. Oh, and by the way, of course, that fits with the examples I have up here, right? So since these two functions were continuous on, actually not on all of R, where is this one continuous?
Is x not equal to zero?
That's correct, yeah. So that's actually its domain. So I have written it in terms of the domain being R, but as I said, you can also work with smaller domains and you should think that too. I just thought it was shorter not to add the domain into my notation yet. But yes, it's only defined where x is not zero. And so these functions are all also going to be continuous. And this one's also continuous actually everywhere. So all of these things had better be continuous where things are avoiding zero. Actually, all of these ones. Okay, so, but in any case, the case that I wanted to look at in particular was that if we have G being continuous, at some point, and let me say it's at f of c, and f is continuous at c. So this time I'm being a little bit more precise with the exact points at which they're continuous. Okay, yeah, and several people in the chat got that also. Very good. Where it's continuous, then the fact that the composition is continuous tells me something. And so what does it mean for the composition to be continuous? It means that the limit as x approaches c of g composed with f, if this is a continuous function and I take the limit as x approaches c, what do I get? Just from the definition of it being continuous, so G composed with F is continuous at C, but it means that the limit's easy to take. I just plug the value in and I'm there, right? So this is just going to be a G composed with F evaluated at C. Okay, and another way to write that is, of course, this is g of f of c, just unpacking the notation of the circle composed. Okay, and since g, however, is continuous, that's the same as the limit as y approaches f of c of capital G of y, right? So these are two different ways to write it, and that's going to come in handy. I can take the limit as x approaches c of the composition here, or I can take the limit as y approaches the inner function evaluated at c of just the outer function, and they give me the same thing. As long as my functions have a sufficient continuity, g has to be continuous and f has to be continuous at the points that they are evaluated at. Okay, so that's a useful example. Actually, maybe I'll just do an example here, just as long as I'm so I have one. So, e.g., I can take the example above. So the limit as x approaches, say, pi of the sine of 1 over x is the same as, of course, since it's continuous, it's just the sine of 1 over pi. But another way to say that is it's the limit as y approaches 1 over pi of sine of y. So that's really what that above sentence means. So that's just a special case of that. Okay, let's see. So I guess that's all I want to say about the continuity situation. And so then I want to move on to differentiation. Okay, so that's the derivatives. All right, and so this is basically the theorems 8.19 and 8.21. Okay, and so this gives us a list of how these operations, these algebraic operations, are going to behave when we differentiate. Okay, let me just put it in the same order as before. And let me write it in a couple and three different ways just so that it's clear what's going on. So again, we're gonna have our functions as before. So if f and g are differentiable, and k is a some number. So that means that f and g are in my space, d1 of r, so it needs to be differentiable. Then we can write down these, and again, I'm gonna write it three ways. So one, I'm gonna say that k times f prime evaluated at some value c is equal to k times f prime of c. Okay, so that's one way to write it. Or the other way to write it, I can use my capital D's. So I can say that capital D of kf is equal to k times capital D of f. Okay, so that's another way to write it. And I can also just do an example. Maybe I'll put that over here. So I can take, say, something like three times, I can use the example I had before. So let me say three times the sine of x prime is just three times the sine of x prime. So that's what that means. Okay, and so then the next case is gonna be the sum. So the derivative of the sum is just the sum of the derivatives. And in differential form, that's d of f plus g is equal to df plus dg. Or in other words, if I take the sine of x plus 1 over x and take its derivative, that's just the derivatives of the two. And maybe I'll just write out what that is. Three times the cosine of x here. And so this is going to be cosine of x minus 1 over x squared, right? So just as you would expect. All right, and then the next one is going to be something like a g times f. And remember that I'm trying to make a distinction between the open and closed dots. One is times and the other is composition. So times f, and of course, this is the product rule that you're familiar with. So f prime of c, oops, let me keep it in the same order. I don't like to change the order of my functions. So g prime of c, f of c plus g of c, f prime of c. Or in terms of my differentials, d of g times f is equal to dg times f plus g times df. And over here, if I have something like 1 over x sine of x and take the derivative, of course, that's the usual chain rule. So I have minus 1 over x squared sine of x plus 1 over x times the derivative of the sine, which is the cosine of x. So those should be familiar. Actually, let me add one that I didn't have before because it's a little bit more complicated and useful, and that's the quotient rule, as you're familiar with. So let me just also stick in the quotient rule. So f over g prime of c is going to be equal to, of course, the familiar thing. So f prime of c, g of c minus f of c, g prime of c. Divided by g squared. Or in terms of my differentials, it looks very similar. So I have df times g minus f times dg divided by g squared. And over here I have something like sine of x divided by x derivative. And so that'll give me put it in the same order. So I guess the way I wrote it was cosine of x times x minus under the bottom, which is one times sine of x divided by x squared. And you should check that those two things are the same. Right. Okay, and so that's the quotient. And what's the one thing I have to check before using the quotient rule? Yeah, exactly. I have to have it not equal to zero. So if g is not equal to zero. Okay, so that's most of the rules. And then the last one is the composition rule, which is our chain rule. So that's G composed with F prime at C is, of course, G prime composed with F at C times F prime at C. And if I write that in terms of my differentials, it looks fairly similar. So that's D of G composed with F is equal to DG composed with F times df. Okay. And of course, I can also do an example of that. I can use the one that I had above. So if I take sine of 1 over x prime, of course, that's what you'd expect. So it's the derivative of the outside function, so cosine of and then you plug in the inside function, then multiply by the derivative of the inside function. Right. Okay, so those are the familiar rules. Okay, let me just note a couple of facts about these. So hence, all right, so let's say that we have my functions f and g are differentiable as they were above. Then what can I say about these other ones? So k times f, f plus g, f times g, and F composed with G. So which space are those in? Do I know that those are again continuous functions?
Yeah.
Yes, they are continuous.
Exactly, they are. And furthermore, they are, so when I look at my hierarchy of spaces, being, you know, so being a function is good, being continuous is better, even better would be if they were differentiable. So are they still differentiable?
I don't think so. Okay.
Okay, so let's look at what we figured out here. So let's look at this one. How do we know if this is differentiable? Well, we try to find its derivative, right? Okay, so we go up here and we say, okay, well, can we find its derivative? And the answer is yes, there's its derivative. Okay, so this one is differentiable. And this rule tells us that this one is differentiable, right? Because it tells us how to find the derivative. Does that make sense? Okay, and then we can look at this one and this rule tells us that there's a way to find its derivative, so it has one. So actually, while these are perfectly good computational tools and they're great for in Math 21, you use them all the time to compute, the most important thing about them for this class is that there's something you can write over here, okay? This thing has a derivative, okay? So it is a differentiable function. Similarly, I mean, it's nice to know, well, the quotient we aren't really paying much attention to, but the this one is much more interesting, and that's the chain rule. And again, the fact that this has a derivative is the most important fact. I mean, it's nice to know what it is, but it's really important to know that it has a derivative, and therefore that it is, again, a differentiable function. So these facts are each telling us that one of these is once again differentiable. Okay, that's the way to think about what that just told us. So these are in D1 of R by the above rules. That makes sense. Okay. Let me try one more. So what if they're in C1? So remember what that means. That means that they have derivatives, and those derivatives are continuous, okay? Okay, so actually, maybe I'll just toss you into a breakout room for a couple of minutes just to think through. So I want to compare C1 and then just keep going with my hierarchy. What about D2 and C2 and C infinity, which we decided was the same as D infinity. Okay, so if we start with two functions f and g that are in one of these spaces, and we do all these different algebraic operations to them, we multiply them by a constant, we add them, we multiply them by each other, or we compose them. But I want to know if they stay in the spaces that we started in, or do they get worse? I mean, maybe if I start with some that are three times differentiable, they're only twice differentiable when you're done. Something like that, okay? All right, so anyway, let me just touch into the breakout rooms for a few seconds. I'll give you 3 minutes to chat about that, and then we can see what ideas people came up with. Oh, yeah, so everyone's just in background, so I'll be back in a second. Okay, so let's see. So what did people decide? So we have, let me just summarize our hierarchy of spaces and see so if we do that. So we have functions, and then contained in that we have continuous functions, and contained in that we have differentiable functions, and contained in that we have continuously differentiable functions, and contained in that we have twice differentiable functions. And it keeps going, and at the end we have these infinitely differentiable functions. So these are the spaces we have. So, so we already worked out in a second ago, last term, that these things are all well defined. So I can multiply. I can do all of my algebraic operations, k times plus times and compose here. This we did in 21a, k times plus times and compose. And this we just talked about a second ago, it's written up above. If I take k times plus times and compose it, it takes a differentiable function, gives me another differentiable function. Okay, what did people figure out about, say, the continuously differentiable functions? If I take these four operations, do all of them take two continuously differentiable functions and give me four new continuously differentiable functions? Did any of the groups figure that out? Oh, thank you. I see it in the chat room. One of the groups said yes. Another one said, or maybe the same one, but several groups seem to have said yes. And I agree. Okay, I agree that it does do that. So if you look at this k times f and you differentiate, if this function is continuous, then when you multiply it by k, it's still continuous, right? So it was not just differentiable, it was continuously differentiable. Similarly here, if f prime is continuous and g prime are continuous, then the sum is still continuous. And so this has a continuous derivative. And now we want to know if this has a continuous derivative. Well, that's a little bit more complicated. But if this is continuous and this is continuous, then this is continuous. And if this is continuous and that is continuous, then that's continuous. And if both of those are, then the whole thing is. So again, this is continuous, right? So those are the steps you would need to check, right? And then similarly here, for the composition, what do I need? Well, so this is continuous. And I know that when I compose two continuous functions, I get another continuous one, so that is. And then this is continuous. And I know when I multiply two continuous functions, it is. So I go through all those steps and I get that it's continuous. So that works. So I agree with you that that's what we get, that these also are preserved by all of these operations, k times plus multiplication and composition. And what about twice differentiable? If I have something that's two times differentiable, then what happens to these four functions? Are they also two times differentiable? Okay, yeah, so several people said yes, and that's correct again. So again, this one's pretty straightforward, right? If it's two times differentiable, then you just differentiate twice. These are not too bad, right? You do it twice and you get twice, that's fair. This one's a little more complicated, right? If I try to take the second derivative here, I have to take the derivative of this thing, but I can do it, right? I go through and at the most, I end up with something where I take two derivatives here, or I take one derivative there and one derivative there. But again, at most, I have to take two derivatives. So again, it's gonna be preserved that if these two G and F both have two derivatives, then their product has two derivatives. Similarly here, if G and F both have two derivatives, then their composition both has two derivatives, okay? So once again, we get that these are preserved. Okay, and how about the infinitely differentiable ones, the smooth functions? Are they still going to be smooth? Yeah, and that it still works. Okay, and let me just finish up with my little diagram here, because I like diagrams. And if I take a derivative of one of these differentiable functions, I get some function, so that's what capital D does. And if I take a derivative of a continuously differentiable one, I get a continuous one, et cetera. So this is how my whole diagram works. The various operations I can do to functions, I can take their derivatives, and that slides me down in my hierarchy. But all these other algebraic operations keep me at the same level in my hierarchy. So that's what happens. Okay, let's see. I have a moment. So what I would like to do next is prove one of these properties, just so that you can see how they do it, and then gives you a similar property to try to prove on your own in the breakout room. So and the proof will be fairly similar to what I have, although the one that I'm going to do is has an extra wrinkle that that you won't have to worry about. Okay, so let's see. Let's use this one. So. Proof. I'll just prove one of them. Okay. So proof of, I'll do the possibly the most interesting, the chain rule. Okay. So I'll run through the proof of that one. So I want to use the composition rule from continuity, of course, because it's composition, and so that's what I want to use. So I want to use. And let's see, I think I have it written out here somewhere. Yeah. Sorry. Actually, maybe I'll put the proof over here because I have what I want to use over there. So I'm going to put the proof over on this side. Okay, so I want to use this fact that I worked out in particular, and the reason I did it was because I want to use it. Okay, so this is the fact that I want to use. All right, so proof of a chain rule. All right, so let's see. So consider the following function. Okay, so first of all, of course, we have G and F are differentiable functions. And so then I want to build the following function. So write capital G sub A of X. And this is going to be my difference quotient, essentially. So it's going to be the difference quotient, little g of X minus little g of A divided by X minus A, which is our usual difference quotient, the slope of the secant line. Okay, and that makes sense as long as X is not equal to A, but I don't want to divide by zero. But when X is equal to A, what's going to make this into a continuous function? Is that clear? What value should go for the case when X is equal to A? Instead of dividing, because I can't divide by zero, so I have to come up with a value here. Does that make sense? So in other words, what's the limit of this function as X approaches A? There is a good guess. What's that? Yes, that's right. It's the derivative, right? That was our definition of the derivative, right? So this is going to be the derivative. I'm not sure that's what you said, but that's the right answer, right? So it should be the derivative at A, right? Because that was our definition, was the limit of that as X approaches A. So this is then equal to G prime. Of A. That's the function I want. And so notice that, which is continuous at A, if and only if G is differentiable at A. Okay, that's practically the definition of being differentiable, was that limit exists and that it's equal to that value. Okay, and that's the same as the definition of being continuous at that point. Okay, so I've written down this extra function that's continuous, and I want to make use of this formula over here where I have a continuous function at some point, and I have another continuous function, and I'm going to take their composition. Okay, so that's the trick I want to use. Okay, and the other continuous function is going to be also f is, why do I know that f is continuous? That's the other one I want to use. Well, that was the theorem we proved last time, right? So if it's differentiable, then it's continuous. So f is continuous. Okay, so now I'm in the situation over here. I have a g that's continuous. And I have an f that's continuous. And so I'm going to write down these two limits and say that they're the same. Okay. So by above, I have that the limit as x approaches c of g composed with f at x is equal to the limit as y approaches f of c of g of y. And the case I'm going to look at is with a equals f of c. All right, and now I'm just going to combine all that. So that was on, again, what I'm doing, just like I did last time, I kind of went through one way, and now the proof I'm writing backwards. So it sort of seems like it comes out of nowhere, but it simplifies the logic. Okay, so now I'm going to compute. Okay, so I want to compute g prime. So g composed with f prime at c. Right, and the claim is that that's going to be the formula for the chain rule. All right, so the derivative of the outside composed with the inside times the derivative of the outside inside. So let's just try that. So this is by definition the limit as x approaches c of g of f of x minus g of f of c. All right, that's what it means to plug x and c into that composition divided by x minus c. So I hope that's clear. That's just the definition of a derivative. Okay, and so now I want to simplify. I want to do the trick to simplify this. So what I'm going to do is multiply and divide by. Actually, let's see. That's going to be the easiest. Yeah, I guess I'll multiply and divide. So this will be the limit as x approaches c. And let's see. So what's the easiest way to write this? I'll take a g of f of x minus g of f of c and divide it by f of x minus f of c and then multiply by f of x minus f of c divided by x minus c. Okay, and so then that'll be equal to the limit as x approaches c of g of f of x minus g of f of c divided by f of x minus f of c times the limit as x approaches c of f of x minus f of c divided by x minus c. And so this will be, so now the key is that this first thing is now the limit as y approaches f of c of g of y minus g of f of c divided by y minus f of c. And then this I'm going to leave the same. Okay, and so then those are both derivatives. So this is then g prime evaluated at f of c, and this one is f prime evaluated at c. So that's what I wanted to get. Okay, so I'm almost out of time, so I won't have time to let you try this computation. But let me write down the one that I'm going to let you do next time, and you can try to make a couple comments about it. So this will be a parametric derivatives so if I have a function that's defined parametrically, so that's so it doesn't actually have to be a function, it can be any other curve. So this will be x of t, and this will be y of t. Okay, and I want to look at the slope. Then I claim, and this is what I'm going to ask you to prove next time, that the limit as s approaches t of y of s minus y of t divided by x of s minus x of t is going to be the quotient of the two derivatives. And this is also the slope of the tangent line. This is going to come up for the L'Hopital rule that we're going to do later. Okay, so we have this parametric equation. And of course, this only makes sense if x prime is not zero. So actually, since we only have a minute, let's just not break do it in breakout rooms, but just think about it and answer in the chat or your voice. What are the possible slopes of the tangent line if x prime is equal to zero? Okay, so just think about that for a second. Right, so again, the picture is we have our x value moving along here as we trace out our curve. And if the derivative in the x direction is zero, I want to know what the possibilities are for the tangent line. What can its slope be? Okay, so I see a one, so that would be something that looks like that. That's a slope of one. So if I look at this curve and if I just trace it out the way I'm tracing it out right now, can anyone see where the time derivative of x? Yeah, vertical, that's the most likely one, right? Because if the way I just traced it, the time derivative of x became zero here and here, right? When it became vertical, the time derivative of x became zero, just the way I traced it. So typically it'll be zero, I mean infinite. So typically the line will be vertical. But that's not the only possibility. What's the other possibility? So let me trace it again. So let's say that I trace it like this. Oops, color went away. Let's say that I trace it like this. And I just stop in places, right? So when I stop, the derivative in the x direction is also zero. So it actually can be any value if both the x and y derivatives are zero. So then I basically have an indeterminate form of zero over zero. And so then it could be any value, okay? Okay, I'm out of time. So I'm going to turn off the recording and.